Hello, and welcome to episode 227 of Effect, the Pantheon of the Icons. I'm Dave.
And I'm Matthew, and we haven't really got much to talk about today. No, we've got plenty to talk about.
Yeah, so thanks for listening, and see you next time.
No, we've got possibly slightly less news from the world of gaming than we usually have. Nothing's particularly inspiring us. We've got no new patrons. We do need to do an old world news update.
Old world news.
Old West news. That's what I mean.
Tales of the Old West news. Yes, absolutely.
There could be some fun there. We ought to call it old world news or news from the West or something. Anyway, we'll work that out for the next episode.
News from the Old West. That's the one.
And then you, David, have got the article. I've just called you David there, like you haven't done your homework properly. But I know you.
So everyone, we are unusually for us recording face to face in the same location. And clearly, as you can tell, Matt can't cope with having me sat actually across the table from him.
Looking at each other in the eye. We don't normally have to look at each other when we do this shit.
Rather than however many miles apart we actually live, in the seclusion of a small room with the door shut.
An hour and 20 minutes apart, that's what I know.
Yeah.
Thank God it is so far. you've got an essay, the essay you promised, on Darkness Points and the Pantheon of the Icons.
Indeed.
But we will hear more about that in a while. Let's kick off, well, with no new patrons, let's go straight into our Old West update.
News from the Old West. We should have a little jingle or something
We can make a little jingle. Yeah. We'll do a little jingle. That'll be our first jingle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be cool. So progress. My first task in these last couple of weeks has been to finish drafting up the quick start rules, which as if you're listeners, of course you're listeners because you're listening.
No, they're not listeners. They just have us on in the background.
If you're regular listeners, you'll know that we're calling that the quick draw rules. Mm-hmm. New good news is I finished that. Matt's complained about some of it.
I've complained about quite a lot of it.
No, very little, actually. I've agreed to change a couple of bits. We've added some stuff.
Really important bits.
Well, we have. It's an interesting process, actually, because we as a result of that, we have tweaked the grappling rules quite a lot.
Mm-hmm. And actually, that's what I said. We should probably leave this for the core book, I think, is how I started that. But we've actually done it in the quick start as well.
And actually making that a little bit more engaging and nuanced than the original version in the open license text. So that's cool. So it's a good process, and that's finished. And I've written a new scenario, introductory scenario called The Last Chibolero, if that's the right way of pronouncing it.
Chibolero. You can ask Solster about that. Yeah. Solster, when you listen to this, come back to us and tell us whether Dave's pronounced it right.
Yeah, and Chibolero is a specifically... it's a specific term relating to the time and to a Mexican buffalo hunter. So you might get a sense of what the scenario?
Scenario.
I'm now being affected by seeing Matt across the table. So you might get a sense of what the scenario is all about. But it's brilliant. I've really enjoyed doing it. And it's great that actually we've done it on schedule, according to the project plan. We're engaging a... very talented editor we haven't used before. So better be good, Neil.
We're looking at you, Neil.
Yes, Neil.
We're looking at the spelling mistakes.
So it's all going really well. Very pleased with how that's gone along.
And we've got some our first pictures back from Malin, our new artist as well. And we're reasonably impressed with those. So we will be seeing more of her work in this quick draw, hopefully. I haven't actually had a reply from her since I sent her new instructions, but we'll chase her on that one.
Yep. Yeah. So obviously there's pretty some tight deadlines going on here. Not only for finishing off the text, which I think is not the biggest challenge we've got, but getting enough artwork produced and getting the layout sorted out. Those are going to be the big challenges. I feel reasonably confident for the quick draw.
Yeah.
Assuming that Marlene is able to do the number of pieces we've asked of her.
Yeah.
It might be a different kettle of fish for the final book because there will be a lot more art required for that. But we've got a guy doing our maps for us, and the maps are pretty good. Very pleased with those. Not that nepotism is a thing, but that happens to be my boy Dean, who's doing a really good job on those. I've just redrawn, even though this won't be in the quick draw, I don't think. No, I've just redrawn. Although,
frankly, your sketch is good enough to go in the quick draw.
Well, that's very kind. Thank you. Yeah. So I've just redrawn the map of New Mexico, which I finished yesterday, which is great fun, actually. It's requiring a lot of research. Now, I did a map in New Mexico when I started the Yonada Springs campaign, because we're obviously setting that in New Mexico. And I did loads of research. And again, quite often there will be towns that didn't exist in 1873. Mm-hmm. So I went through all and checked it all. But on this one, I don't know why I rechecked. I think it was because the town was called Angel Fire and it sounded a bit unusual. So I checked it again. And it turned out that that's a ski resort established in 1982. So that's gone. But there is another town not so far away that did exist in 1873, which has now been added to the map.
So where is that? Which town is that? I'm looking at
Elizabethtown is the one that I've added.
It's not quite as cool a name as Angel Fire.
It's not, is it? No, it's not. No.
But Elizabethtown, excellent. That's what I like to see. And we've moved a bit. Originally, our first playtest campaign, which is still ongoing with one of our groups, was set in Nevada.
Yes.
And we're thinking that Nevada would be the core book stuff, but we're enjoying New Mexico so much that we're looking at New Mexico being the main location in the core book.
Yeah, I think so. I think that makes sense as well. I mean, Nevada is great, actually. There's lots of brilliant history, but perhaps it's not quite so eye-catching or as good a hook for someone coming to a Wild West game as New Mexico being so iconic in the in the history. And then also thinking that we've got the scenario for the core book already written, which is at the moment set in Nevada, but I'm thinking that I'll rewrite that and set it in New Mexico because that comes with a town called Steaming Rock. We've been running the other campaign with Yonada Springs, which again has got a town set in New Mexico. And the introductory scenario that I've just done for the quick draw rules is also set in New Mexico, but in the northeast of New Mexico. So all these things actually start to build a good level of content of New Mexico. Yeah. So I think if we focus on that for the core book and say, here's all this other stuff for New Mexico, that'll make a much more fully fleshed and good gaming location to play.
And it's also worth, I think, pointing out that we're, some of these, apart from the town Angel Fire that only existed from the 1980s onwards.
Yeah.
We are inventing some of the towns for the locations for these scenarios.
Yeah.
Because there are some great stories, for example, in Silver City and stuff like that, which are historical stories that I think we will get onto. But what we want to do with these initial scenarios is make sure that we had total freedom not to have to conform to history and to have some terrible people in there that, nobody's great-grandchildren were going to get upset that they're...
That person is obviously my great-great-grandfather, you bastards. Yeah.
So we're avoiding that entirely with the initial scenarios, but I think we can unpack as we go on more the history of New Mexico.
For sure. And I think my intention with the campaign chapter in the book will be to have some information about some of the other important towns in New Mexico, like Santa Fe and Albuquerque and Silver City as well, because I don't know why I love Silver City so much. That scenario we ran there, just the one. I don't know why. I don't know. I just love it.
It was a great adventure. It wasn't my favorite adventure. Much preferred our journey to Albuquerque. We're just editing now, and it's just started the adventure that I'm calling Confederate in my editing notes, which
with Andy's
is set back in Steaming Rock, but with
Yonada Springs.
In Yonada Springs, but with Andy's character as a central character. I forgot how much I'd enjoyed that playing it.
And
listening to the edit again, I go, oh, this is it. This is a great adventure. Which is, every time I edit these adventures for the actual play podcast, I keep going, this is great. Which is why you're seeing so much enthusiasm on getting episodes out when I'm also working full time, actually.
Yeah, I've been very impressed with your your rate of production on those. That's
I do it in batches, and I've got episodes all the way up to the middle of April now. So once a week they'll be coming out there, and I urge everybody to listen to them, even if you're not a big AP fan, because part of the fun of it is listening to our arguments over the rules, because these are playtests.
Yes,
and I get pissed off when my character isn't able to do something because they're not getting any faith. And I accuse Dave frequently of creating rules that are not fun. So you get to hear all of that live. Well, not live.
Not live, but...
But that's part of the development process for the game. Shall we shut up now?
Shall we? Yeah, I'm quite enjoying talking about Toto.
Yeah, well, yeah, but we've got to save something for in 2 weeks' time.
That's true. As you can tell, we're both very enthusiastic about this at the moment and really enjoying putting it together. And yeah, fingers crossed, it continues to go as well as it has done so far.
Okay, so Toto gets its own news slot, but all the other games in the world...
Get one slot,
and that is our traditional World of Gaming slot. And I guess the big news for you and me, Dave, is Tuesday coming up, probably 2 o'clock in the afternoon, GMT, that is. It'll be different where you are. The new Coriolis game is launched on Kickstarter.
Indeed. This might be a stupid question. Are you going to back it?
Of course I'm going to back it. I mean, there's every chance we'd get it for free anyway from Free League. But, yeah. I'm going to back it. I may. We'll see what the deluxe version looks like. And I might even get it that way.
Yeah, I'm going to back it, of course. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. The conversations we had over the last few weeks about it had made me initially feel, well, it's moving away from... some of the things that I love the most about Coriolis. But actually, the more I think about it, the more excited I am to see what they've done with that. I'm still slightly concerned because, you know, the whole, you know, having the mechanics of the game make you play a religious character religiously is brilliant. I love it. No other game has done that. I mean... back in the day, you talked about Pendragon.
Yeah.
You know, where all our characters, or your character who converted, you know, should be in church every 5 minutes praying and doing stuff for the Lord's glory. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't seem to happen.
The mechanics don't encourage that in the way that...
Whereas Coriolis is the first game I've come across that does that. And losing that, I still have a question mark in the back of my mind about it. But it's going to be... yeah, I'm excited to see what they do with it. You know, I should have more trust and faith in Nielsen Costa and the guys from Free League because they do produce fucking good stuff.
Yeah, and it's an interesting, there's a sort of, I'm not accusing anybody in particular on social media on this one, but there is a general feeling on social media, and this isn't just about Coriolis, but people want to see more for their favourite game from the company. So
yeah.
Somebody I noticed, for example, was talking about, oh, wouldn't it be good if there was a Japanese Versen supplement? And I said, well, there is a Japanese Versen supplement by our great friend Thomas, and it's brilliant.
Yeah.
And yes, it's inspired by these wood prints that he was looking at.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, but what I really want is one from Free League.
Yeah.
Now, that's fine. I mean... Free League, come and talk to our friend Thomas and produce with Thomas a glorious Japanese supplement. I too would love that, but I don't want to devalue Thomas's work because it's pretty damn good.
It is very good.
Everybody who worked on that, Brandon, I know from Alaska or somewhere, I think as well,
was involved. Yeah.
So it's a great piece of work.
It is, and
it doesn't matter that it doesn't come from Free League, but people like stuff that comes from the main company, the IP holding company. And here is the IP holding company doing new stuff. And now some people are going, but I wanted some more of the old stuff. And I'm thinking, this is their love. They love this game more. The company only exists because they love this game.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think we should trust them to let them take it in the direction they want to take it.
I think it's also a bit different, though. I think fan-created content... for things like Versen. Okay, I'm going to argue against myself here, but
well done. You often do.
There is a strong element of, like Thomas, taking the game they love, taking a setting they love, and making that game in that setting. So Japanese Versen, the US Fersen version that someone did.
Yeah.
And those are kind of like standalone.
Mm-hmm.
They don't affect the whole canon of the game. Whereas if you're fan producing something for Coriolis, it feels to me that that is more likely to affect the canon of the whole environment. So you're not taking Coriolis and plonking it into the fifth horizon and doing your own version of it. You are changing
things happening in the third horizon.
Changing the creator's creation in doing that. And I think that's different. Because then when you get fan content doing that, you get no overall control of the direction of that change. And I think that's probably what I would be looking for from Free League. If they wanted to do more stuff for Coriolis, the third horizon, they would then be deciding the direction of that.
Yeah.
Now, you could argue they've done that in the Mercy of the Icon campaign. And they've done that in a way that perhaps some people disagree with.
Yeah.
Which is fine. But so I think maybe that's the difference. It's easier to accept, is that the right word, a fan-created new setting for Versen,
mm-hmm.
Versen Alaska, or, you know, Versen Iceland, or whatever it might be, than it is to accept something that is basically changing the underlying story of the whole setting.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, the beauty of arguing with yourself, Dave, is you always win.
No, I don't, actually.
I think let's trust them. I'm sure whatever it is going to be brilliant, and it'll be different, but it'll be brilliant. Yeah. And I think there'll be enough of old Coriolis in there to keep my heart beating for it.
Wonder where you're going with that.
Yeah,
but, it is interesting because having worked on the essay for today's episode, it's really rekindled. It's reminding me how much I love Coriolis as a game. And getting the book off the shelf and having a sniff, because it's got a very powerful and unique
all
aroma.
That black ink, it smells.
It's brilliant. I love it. And it does make me want to run another campaign of Coriolis, Third Horizon.
Well, when we've got this Western book out, then you'll have some time to do that. But not before.
I might want to keep running Tales of the Old West, though, because I have really been enjoying it.
People will be asking for supplements and official content.
That's true.
Despite the fact the official content is the history of the United States, guys.
There is canon there already. Yeah, yes. Exactly. It does require reading quite a lot of potentially quite heavy books. I was going to bring it down. The book I'm reading at the moment is called The Restoration of America. Mm. And it's written by a guy called Ned Blackhawk. And it's a history of the US, but kind of from the indigenous perspective, or with a more focused on the indigenous perspective. And it's very big. It's very dense. So it's slow going, but it's great. I'm loving it. It's really interesting. And I've read quite a lot about Native American history, largely around trying to, get things right for Tales of the Old West. But this is teaching me a lot. I'm learning an awful lot from reading this book. And Ned Blackhawk doesn't hold back from being critical of, this isn't a Indigenous people's fan fest. This is, warts and all.
Yeah.
So you're getting, it feels to me you're getting a much more rounded picture. And it is a picture that is very, very critical of, the white settlement and colonization, but it also doesn't always paint the indigenous peoples or some of the indigenous peoples in the most glowing light as well. There was a lot of internecine rivalry and hatred between a lot of the tribes and some of that comes out. But it's fascinating. I'm just after the Civil War at the moment. And that seems to be a bit of a watershed when the US, the Union government, US government, having won that war,
Feels it has a mandate,
feels it has the bandwidth, to use a modern phrase, or the time to attend to what they considered to be the Indian problem.
Mm-hmm.
And that obviously didn't go terribly well for the Native Americans.
Reasonably large trained military to do it with as well.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Shall we move on to Household? Because this isn't
we've gone back to
Old West News Part 2. So coming back to the world of gaming, a thing I am quite excited about, having played it only recently for the first time, you've heard me gabble on about
before,
is Household.
Yep.
Now, they made an announcement a few weeks ago that excited a lot of people. Actually, the announcement itself wasn't that exciting, and that is that they're doing a 5e version of Household. Let's not talk about that, Dave.
Was there an... So this is a new edition of Household. The Household exists already?
Household exists already, yeah.
In a non-5e, yeah, its own custom game system.
Or it was kickstarted, I think, in 2021.
Did we have this conversation last time?
I'm not sure that we did.
Familiar.
Yeah, but so there is a version of Household. It uses two little mice's rule set.
We have had this conversation. Like,
but that's a great version. It works really well. I cannot imagine it in 5e, but I'm sure they'll do quite a good job of adapting it. Yeah. That's not what interests me, though. The Kickstarter, which I honestly can't remember when it starts, but I think it's only a couple of days after Coriolis, which is a pain in the ass, because I would want to invest in that, not for the 5e version, but because they're reprinting the original
the old version
as well.
So you get both.
And you cannot get those books for love nor money currently,
okay,
except as PDF. If it proves to be too expensive or I feel too poor after backing Coriolis, I will just buy the PDFs off DriveThru.
You are loaded now, aren't you?
No, I'm not loaded. I'm working full
time.
You're
more loaded than you were.
Yeah. But my wife would still not appreciate me, because I remember this Household Kickstarter being really expensive at the time.
Right.
And if
okay.
they're distributing from America and we've got shipping and tax costs as well, that's going to put it out of my budget, mate.
Yeah. It's funny. I keep telling my wife, because obviously now I earn a lot less money than I used to. Mm. I don't back any Kickstarters anymore, hardly ever. Yeah, mm-hmm. very rare. But then things keep on arriving. Now these are tend to be things that I backed a long time ago before I, you know, quit being a civil servant. But still, it doesn't support my narrative terribly well.
Well, one thing, I mean, luckily Jenny is nowhere near us and can't hear
exactly. And she won't bother listening to the podcast, so we can say whatever we like.
One of the beauties I've discovered with my wife is now that Free League sends us free stuff, we can always go, oh yeah, we got
it's freebie.
I'm not lying and saying it's a freebie. I'm just letting her assume it might be something I got sent for free.
Yeah.
That works quite well, particularly with the Coriolis Kickstarter, which she will work
when you
out.
Get two copies of it. Yeah. They inadvertently sent me two copies.
But that is a nice segue onto the next item, Dave, isn't
it? Is it now?
Yeah.
Oh, it is. It is. So a long time ago, I don't remember exactly how long, but at least a couple of years, possibly even three, I backed on Kickstarter Greg Stoltz's Rain game.
Mm.
I'm not quite sure why I did. I think there were certain mechanics in it that it was talking about that appealed to me.
I think I can tell you why. It's about running a kingdom. It's not about being an adventurer. It's about being a king.
That was it. Or,
some sort of officer. It's a high up. It's a, it's a kingdom level game.
Yep. And I, having forgotten all about it for many, many moons, got a notification last week that it's on the way and I should get it early next week, in the next few days. So, yeah, that would be cool.
I'm quite excited to see that. Have you had the PDFs already? Oh, yeah, you don't read PDFs anyway.
No, I don't think I've got the PDFs, no. But, yeah, so that would be exciting to see that finally arrive. And, again, it brings us straight back to that problem of explaining to my wife that I backed this many years ago, not in the last 6 months.
You wait, we're going to get Western soon.
Yeah, I know. They'll be flooding through the door. But yeah, the other sort of slight bonus for me in that sense is that chances are it'll arrive when Jenny's at work in London. So I can put the cardboard away. And she'll never know anything else.
Maybe put the cardboard into somebody else's cardboard recycling box.
We have so much cardboard, that doesn't matter. Yeah, that doesn't matter. We've got cardboard. If anybody wants any cardboard, you can have it for free. I've got a bloody garage full.
Okay, so Rain's coming and I'll be very excited to see it. Talking of cardboard, we're segueing like nobody's business. What I particularly love from Dragonbane, people who've heard me speak on Dragonbane before know that I love the box set with the cardboard standees, mm-hmm. which provide everything you need for playing Dragonbane
straight
in
away.
One box.
Yep.
Now, if you buy the bestiary, of course, you don't have any cardboard standees for all those new monsters.
No.
Except...
Ta-da!
You do, because they've released, or they will release, I can't remember when, I'll put a link in the show notes, cardboard standees for all the new monsters and I guess peoples in
the bestiary. So yeah. how do you get those? Do you have to buy them?
You have to buy them, yeah.
Yeah. They don't come to people who...
But I mean, they're worth it because they're thick cardboard.
Yeah.
What they don't come with are the little plastic stands you put them in. But, you know...
If you've got the starter set, you've got a handful of those already anyway. Yeah. Yeah.
So I just thought that was brilliant. Cool. I love that. And
how much is that going to retail for? Did you notice?
I honestly can't remember.
No.
Follow the link in the show notes and see what it is. I can't imagine it's going to be massively cheap. But
I was going to say, is it going to make people go... when
well,
they see it.
Compared to the cost of a little plastic figure now,
yeah.
You know, given, I don't think you can buy a plastic figure for less than £3 or £4.
Yeah.
To get all those for what?
Yeah. 15 quid or something.
15,
maybe.
20 quid, maybe, I imagine. Something like that for a couple of sheets of cardboard, yeah. Which may sound expensive for a couple of sheets of cardboard, but for the play value.
If you're getting 30 standees, yeah. Maybe it might be worth it. Yeah.
I think it's great.
And I mean, slight digression on the topic still, but the bestiary is excellent.
Mm-hmm.
That book is, you know, I like Dragonbane. I think it looks lovely. I've never really had the urge to play it. I quite enjoyed running it at Comic-Con last year. But it still felt a bit D&D-ish, I guess.
Yeah,
Rune
Quest-ish, of course,
part
as
of
well.
Yeah, yeah. But then having got the bestiary and having had a look through that, I started getting a little, you know, kindling of something about some of these. These are really nice monsters. These are really well produced. The artwork is, as you would expect,
yeah.
Superb.
Our friend Magnus did a bunch of that.
He did, absolutely, yeah.
His story
I think, didn't there. Magnus offer to run it again for us?
He did.
I think we should go back because the last time we played it was great fun. I really enjoyed that. I don't think it's going to get up the list for me high enough for me to start running a campaign of it anytime soon.
No.
But I just wanted to say about, you know, the bestiary is such a beautiful book that it did get me thinking about it when I hadn't really been thinking about it before.
Yeah, yeah. I think,
a recommendation.
I think we've got to admit, I love Dragonbane more than I love some of the other games that Free League have produced. But we can only play so many games.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So I will always do a one-off of Dragonbane if somebody offers. But when it comes to campaign...
Unlikely to get to the table, yeah.
I'm very pleased to see, though, that Mohammed in Egypt is running Dragonbane as a campaign.
Yes, that's cool. Yeah, that's really good.
As well.
Yeah. I mean, you say it does compete with Forbidden Lands. And as we said before, we love Forbidden Lands so much that it's...
Yeah.
We're unlikely to be running two fantasy campaigns in parallel.
Absolutely.
And as it stands, Forbidden Lands wins that.
Cool.
Wins that fight.
I've got to do an adventure for the next time. Maybe I'll look at that bestiary from...
Well, it's not a bad idea. I mean, you could convert some of the things in there if they're not already in the Forbidden Lands.
Yeah.
Beasts.
Now you're making me think I should look at that adventure book from the box set of Dragonbane. You can drop those in there pretty easily.
Yeah, that would be very easy, yeah.
Anyway, we're getting aside from the subject there. Bestiary. the other thing, again, I'll put a link to the show notes. I'll put a link in the show notes. Chaosium are doing a design challenge.
I did see that, yeah.
And that looks quite good fun. I'm kind of torn about the prize money.
It's $10,000, isn't it?
Well, but divided among a number of winners.
Was it? So okay,
I'm thinking, you know, it's not necessarily... knowing what we are spending on maps and art, for example...
ten grand don't go far.
It's not going to go far. So if an individual prize winner gets, say, 2,000, you know, it's going to be hard. It's not impossible, but it's going to be hard eking that out to put something online. But still, I love that.
It would be zine-ish, wouldn't it?
You know, yeah, I love the concept. And I urge anybody who enjoys BRP. So yeah, and it's about taking their BRP basic role-playing core set of rules and doing something
new. Coming up with something new. Yeah, exactly. It sounds fun. Sounds interesting. I mean, I don't have the time. No. Or the inclination, actually.
We could quickly rewrite the rules to Tales of the Old West to be BRP.
We could.
But
quickly do that, yes. I think so.
No.
Having spent 4 years getting the rules to where they are now.
Yeah.
But yes, no, good stuff. Good luck to everyone who's entering it. I mean, I'm quite keen to do maybe do a zine next year. We'll produce a zine next year on my American football role-playing game, which I haven't finished yet. It goes in spurts. I get enthusiasm and I crack at it for a couple of weeks and do loads, and then it all falls off. But actually, there isn't that much left to do. Okay, put it all together in a sensible way. But I think the game mode, excuse me, the game mode is mostly there. I've got some fiddling to do with some of the stats around that. And then the basics of how the rest of the game would work, I know it in my head. I just need to write it down. Cool. So there isn't that much work left. But let's see how much time I get. Yeah.
Let's get the Western. Let's get your paying.
Absolutely.
Writing work,
first.
But it would be fun to do it for next year's Zine.
That's kind of what I was thinking, yeah, because ZineQuest is what, going to be February or something?
Something.
Was it February this year?
Now that we're like that with Kickstarter, because we've got a proper relationship with them, we'll find out that shit, I'm sure.
Yeah. Cool.
Let's move on.
Is that it?
That's it for the world of gaming.
Okay, cool.
Shall we move on to your essay?
Coriolis. Yeah, indeed.
Last time, I accepted the challenge to, as I said in the show, fix darkness points. Now, why would I do such a foolish thing? I must have said it in the heat of the moment, a sudden rush of blood to the head, or perhaps inspired by my rekindled love of Coriolis, the Third Horizon. For that is something I want to briefly reflect on. I love this game, and the chance to dive into it again as a GM and with my designer head on has been a lot of fun. Just opening the book and inhaling that gorgeous and unique smell takes me back, and you can just feel the love that Nils, Costa, and the others at Free League have poured into it. But all that said, I'm not sure I can fix darkness points, or if they even really need fixing. But I did promise to take a look at the pantheon of the icons and give some thought to what they might be like, how they might interact with one another, and how the prayers of the mortals might affect them, and what this might mean for darkness points. So buckle up, my fellow pilgrims, this might be a long one. The first thing I'm going to say is a caveat. As we all know, Coriolis is renowned for making everything in shades of grey, and every icon has different sides to their nature, depending on who you are, what Third Horizon culture you grew up in, and what you believe. So, as always, I caveat this discussion with the fact that this is my take, and you don't have to agree with me. I'm imagining the icons as a version of the Greek gods, supernatural entities but with the desires, whims, and motivations of normal people. They can be pleased, appeased, displeased, or angered by the worship and the prayers of mortals. They can be petty, vindictive, and vengeful. Or in the right mood, generous, compassionate, and loving. They also compete with one another, a constant politicking in the heaven-like dark between the stars, taking out their frustrations on the mortals who dare to call for their aid in a moment of crisis. For that's what pushing a role is all about. It's a mortal human asking for something from the icons, about them demanding help, and taking from the icons without something in return. Naturally, the icons are at liberty to ignore that request, and the push roll goes badly, or gracefully accede and grant the boon the player character has demanded, and the pushed roll goes well. On the other hand, preparatory prayer and propitiation are the opposite. The mortals are worshipping the icons, giving their prayers and adulations to them for free, asking, in that moment anyway, for nothing in return. Yes, they receive the blessing of the icons in that instance, so future prayers get priority boarding, as it were. They gain a bonus to pushing certain skills based on what icon they've worshipped in advance. But that's a benefit for the future. This brings up an interesting question. Are the icons all equal? If you look at their descriptions, some are clearly held in greater regard than others. But I think their power is seen most clearly in the blessing they give when worshippers get their knees dusty in a chapel and pray. In doing so, the blessing of the icon receiving the prayers gives a bonus to certain skills when those skills are pushed in tense moments. Some icons only bless one skill, the Lady of Tears, the Deckhand, and the Merchant. Others bless two, the Dancer, the Gambler, the Judge, the Traveller, and the Faceless One. But only one blesses three, the Messenger. Does that indicate the hierarchy of the heavens? I'm going to say that it does, with the omniscient and temperamental Messenger holding the best hand of cards in the icon power struggle. And that brings me to the nature of the icons, where I'm going to boil down their nature into two descriptors. I've already told you those for the Messenger, omniscient and temperamental. But what about the others? I'll start with our second tier icons, those that bless two skills at a time. The book tells us the Dancer is the bond between lovers, or in another guise, the personification of lust. Her dark side is the Beast, perhaps formed by a jilted lover. I see the Dancer as a jealous icon, vindictive if not treated well, so her aspects would be jealous and vain. The Gambler is adventurous, curious, a trickster, who hates cowards and those who take no risks. I see him as inquisitive and contemptuous. The Judge presides over the afterlife, and as such feels to me like he should be the princeps, the first citizen of the icons. But if he's not, and the Messenger rules over him, the Judge is still senior and carries much clout in the pantheon. The Judge's alternate side, the Martyr, willingly takes shit for the other icons, and accepts unjust punishments for the greater good. As such, the Judge is authoritative and compassionate. The Traveller is the star singer, the one who spreads wisdom, but is also depicted as Demiurge, the evil cosmic spider who controls the web of travel and transport, and perhaps was the original portal creator. His aspects are wise and malicious. The Faceless One is closest to the dark between the stars, known as the shadow that brings madness. As such, many see this icon as the purest of them all. So the Faceless One is pure, but insane. Now to the lower ranking icons. The Lady of Tears is the escort of the dead, guiding those once mortal souls to the afterlife. As such, and as the Judge presides over the afterlife, it feels she is subservient to that icon. But she has an angry side, shown in her power over the element of fire. So she is considerate, but vindictive. The Merchant is depicted as either a fat, jolly man, or a kindly, elderly woman. But is neither jolly nor kindly. Miserly and mean, more like, the Merchant expects, nay, demands tribute, and cares nothing for the mortals who must provide it. And last but not least, or maybe the least, actually, the Deckhand. He is depicted as a tired boy with broom in hand, who blesses the home and hearth, ships and cargo. He protects the oppressed and downtrodden, and I think that's because he is put upon and downtrodden in the icon pantheon. His aspects would then be protective and tireless. That's all very interesting, I hear you say, but how can that help in-game? What does it have to do with darkness points, and how can we use them? Well, I have an idea. On page 232 of the core book, you will find the Coriolis calendar in circular form, with the 9 segments in their 3 triads of 3 segments each, listed by the icon that represents each segment. Get your book off the shelf, if you can, and take a look now, as that will help you imagine what I'm getting at. Imagine a version of that diagram, which also lists the 2 aspects of each icon, along with 5 tick boxes for each icon as well. In-game, the players must always nominate the specific icon they are calling out to, when they push a roll or worship in a chapel. If they've had the good sense to complete preparatory prayer for the divine push bonus, they will have to call out to that icon to get that bonus. Each time they call for an icon's help and push their roll, the player marks off one of the five boxes next to that icon. This shows how much the player character is bothering that icon. They mark it with a tick if the outcome of the pushed roll was successful, or with a cross if the outcome was poor or a failure. When they have pushed three times, and three boxes are checked, something happens. If the pushed rolls have generally been successful, i.e. there are more ticks than crosses, the icon who has been called upon for help is happy. However, one of the other icons is jealous at the attention the player's character is giving to that icon. The GM immediately gains an extra darkness point due to that divine outrage, and must spend it against the player character in question. This represents the other icon's jealous anger, and the action resulting from that darkness point should relate to one of the icon's two aspects in some way. So for example, let's say the faceless one has been called upon three times, and the roles have gone well. The other icons are envious that the mortals have not called upon them instead. The GM decides the gambler, with his aspects of inquisitive and contemptuous, has been angered, and gets a darkness point to spend against the PC immediately. This allows the GM to change the narrative in a fun way, based on the aspects of the angry icon. Perhaps a nearby guard, journalist, inquisitor, or neighbourhood watch warden becomes suddenly inquisitive into what's been going on, and gets involved. Or maybe a friend or important NPC involved in a tense negotiation suddenly takes offence for no obvious reason and becomes contemptuous of the player characters. Now on the other hand, if the pushed rolls had generally been unsuccessful, there are more crosses than ticks, then the icon who has been called upon is not enjoying the attention and gets angry. The GM gets a darkness point to spend on the PC in question, but this time the outcome depends on the specific icon's aspects. In our example, that would be the faceless one's aspects, of pure and insane. Perhaps the PC goes temporarily mad or out of their mind, or a nearby ally or enemy goes bonkers. Alternatively, maybe a bystander sees the icon's purity shining through the player character, and they gain an unwelcome hanger-on or groupie at a time where they could really do without. At this point, if the icon is unhappy, the checkboxes are all wiped clean, and the PC starts again with no boxes ticked or crossed. However, if the icon is happy, the boxes remain checked. Future pushes fill out the fourth and fifth boxes, again with a tick for success or cross for failure. If, after all five boxes are now checked, at least four of them have ticks, the icon is delighted with that character, and may become honoured of that icon. Being honoured brings them a plus one bonus to every die roll from now on. Well, that is, until they fail a pushed test, and the icon gets bored with them. Then the track is reset to the beginning. But what if a player character is so devout, they get honoured with two icons simultaneously? Well, then they have to choose. They gain the honoured bonus from the icon they choose, but the rejected icon is incandescent with rage. Any attempt to pray to that icon, at a chapel, during a push or elsewhere, is an automatic fail, including a pushed roll that had successes before the roll was pushed. This lasts until the blessing of the other icon expires, and all the icons are back to being equal in the eyes of the righteous. Now, I have no idea whether this would work at the table, but I like the idea of making the icons themselves more involved in what's happening on the ground. We know they exist. You pray to them, and good things actually happen in the real world. So why not expand on that a little bit? This way your players would become more intimately acquainted with the icons, would feel like they would get to know them a bit, build a personal relationship with them through their prayer and the results of that worship, something that religions do, and religious people feel. It also brings some hints and ideas for a GM who may be struggling with the narrative approach to using darkness points. In my opinion, the best use of darkness points, but the hardest for a GM to get consistently right, and keeps the icons front and centre in a game that stands on the foundation of the icon pantheon.
Now, there are things I like in this and there are things I don't like. And the thing I don't like, we'll come to that straight away. You recommend that people go to, I'm going to read it out of the text here because you've given me your notes, page 232 of the core book to find the Coriolis calendar.
I know there is another one. I had it to hand.
You knew there was another one somewhere. You'd seen it, I don't know, somewhere on the Free League workshop.
Well, I did assume that we would mention it in this conversation. I didn't think you would come out so foaming at the mouth, mad about the fact that I hadn't mentioned it in my piece, but there is a fabulous Coriolis calendar produced by...
By me and by...
John Salquist.
John Salquist, thank you. And it's got beautiful art in it. What you don't realise is this whole New Horizon may have a bloody different date system, and McCallan is out the window with this new game.
But then you just have to do a new one.
Well, we might have to. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah,
and you've already set the precedent.
Or we just make sure that the Coriolis time standard keeps even
nine.
In the explorer.
Yeah,
that's what we'll say. Yeah, we'll make it work somehow.
Yes.
Anyway, yeah. So that was my first thing. If you are playing in the Third Horizon, though, the Coriolis calendar is beautiful, informative, and it lets you organize your campaigns with a proper actual year round.
This is like
time.
So I've got on YouTube to watching an astrophysics astrology channel. Where there's an astrophysicist called Becky Smethurst, who talks about lots of stuff. But a lot of her stuff is, there's paid promotions in it.
Mm.
And halfway through the 20-minute conversation, she stops and spends 3 minutes talking about her her sponsor. And that's just how you sounded, just there. Just going straight back into...
Remember, some time ago, I rejected our free gifts from Manscaped. Otherwise, we'd have to be talking about male grooming.
Otherwise, I would have the smoothest.
Let's move on. Okay, but what I definitely like about it, is this idea of devotion to individual ones. So unpack that for me some more.
I think the key thing I was trying to do was make the icons more of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the real world, religious people will say that they have a relationship with their God.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like a relationship where they go and have a cup of tea or chat about the weather. It's different to that.
I think we frequently chat about the weather with God. I mean, he never replies, but I think a lot of us say,
God, it's raining again. Yeah, well, he's not going to listen to that, is he? So I wanted to make them more real, I guess, but without making them superpowered NPCs. Mm. They're not going to have a conversation with your character, but the player in going through, gaining greater devotion and maybe becoming honored with a particular icon would hopefully then build up some kind of feeling of relationship or intimacy with that icon, and that would then help enrich the game for them a little bit. As I said in the bit, I've got no idea how this would play at the table. It might not work well at all. But that was kind of my intention behind it.
Cool. No, I love it. I love the fact you get that plus one. I love the fact that, you know, when you fail a push test, then that shows the gods' lack of interest in you.
Yeah.
And suddenly you've lost that bonus. I love it all. I think it's great.
Cool.
It doesn't do what you originally set it out to do, which is fix darkness points.
Well, I did right at the start. I said, what a foolish thing for me to have said.
Yeah.
Because actually, darkness points in the way they are, unless you completely change them, I think probably can't
be
fixed, if that's the right word.
We have spent the last few years on this very podcast
talking about
things. And it's kind of good, because what I didn't want is for you to fix darkness points just before we move away from darkness points.
Yeah.
That would have been gutting, that would.
And I think, you know, you could fix darkness points, but then they wouldn't be darkness points anymore.
Yeah. And as you say at the end, the narrative approach to using darkness points is the best approach to using darkness points.
Yeah, but it's difficult. It can be tough
for a GM. I think it's quite easy.
I think it's easy
if every time you tell a bit of story, you drop a darkness point in the pot as though it's significant. That's what I do.
Yeah.
And then that's the easy way of doing it. Oh, you hear a strange sound. Darkness pointing to the pot.
Yes.
Yeah, oh, then suddenly that strange sound has significance.
Yes.
It didn't really.
But. Yeah. You can't do that too often.
No.
Because otherwise, you know, you're a crying wolf. But yeah. And again, you see the idea of the icons having the kind of their two aspects is basically a like a prompt or a trigger for the GM to say, okay, so the one of the icons is pissed at them for being so devout to the judge. Which one of these would apply in this situation? And go, okay,
yes,
you know, considerate. Okay, someone is going to be considerate to somebody else rather than the player character, or you know.
Or the gambler is pissed off with you and suddenly the police are interested in your activities. They're inquisitive.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. So what I have done, I've done a post on my blog, RPG Gods.
Whoa! Really?
I know, first time in 3 years. Basically, putting this on there and doing a very quickly drawn on PowerPoint diagram of the calendar.
We'll put a link in the show notes.
With the,
we'll put the link in the show notes after we put the link to my fucking calendar.
To the calendar. Yes. Well, maybe you could do a new version of the calendar.
The link in the show notes for your link to your blog will be really, really small.
Size is important, man. But that's there, so you can print that off from there if you want to give it a go at your table. But again, as I was writing this, and as I said earlier on. It's really got me interested in playing Coriolis again, and I would quite like to try this in a Coriolis campaign. Quite when I'll get round to doing a Coriolis campaign, I don't know, but we will see. Yeah.
Well, it's the sort of thing that you may find is quite easy to drop even into a New Horizon.
Possibly.
If you are inclined.
Possibly.
To,
it does depend on how front and centre the icons are in.
We can make them front and centre, Dave. We can make them front and centre.
We could do, yeah.
Remember, there's a bloody free licence now out there for us.
So what we do, as soon as they produce the, what's it called? The Great
Dark. The Great Dark. Coriolis, the Great Dark.
Yep.
We do Icons of the Dark or something as a supplement. Yeah.
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 We just take their core book, rewrite it with icons in it and produce it and sell it.
No, I think it's probably a thing of license against
that. Yeah, possibly.
But we could do a supplement that's got icons in it. I'm sure we could.
We could, yeah.
Yeah.
The hidden icons or something.
Anyway, that's the end of our recording time.
Cool. How long have we been going?
We've been going for 40 minutes, so this should end nicely in about an hour, shouldn't it? When we've edited it all together.
Is that only 40 minutes?
42 minutes, 43 minutes now we've been talking.
Oh, that's cool.
Well, 43 minutes and 4 seconds now.
The next 20 minutes, are you just like, 44 minutes now.
Now, let me tell you about an idea I've had for next time and just see if it floats your boat.
Okay.
We, as we mentioned before, have been looking at the quick start rules. And
quick
we had
draw
a bit of a discussion.
Let's call them quick
the
draw
quick rules.
Sorry,
yeah, quick draw rules, yeah. But we had a bit of discussion around the criticals table, which we've already discussed. That works a little bit differently to other criticals tables. And we were talking about the odds of dying and stuff like that. And it made me think, well, have we ever actually looked at what the odds of dying and incapacitating wounds and things like that are in all the different
Free League
Year Zero games and see how their critical tables line up or differ. And I thought I might take that on for the next episode.
Yeah, why not? That sounds interesting.
Yeah.
Cool. So
that's what we're going to do. How easy is it to die, effectively, from a crit in all the various games?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, something else that made me think about this. I can't remember how the crit tables work in Blade Runner, but I recently played in the first episode of Fiery Angels.
Yeah.
Which you'll see on Raldanash's channel.
Cool.
And, of course, the crit system is a bit different there. You roll a D12 for a start, and I got a 12 and blasted somebody's head off, which is great cinematically. Perfect for the narrative.
Were you persecuting replicants?
Oh, of course, yeah. I mean, that's my job.
Okay. So some poor replicant had his head shot off.
Well, maybe. I'm not convinced that we're going to find out he was a replicant. Yeah, but
so
never mind.
Some poor person.
We thought he was a replicant. We were firm in the knowledge that he was.
That's good enough
a
for you, is
and
it?
And not just okay. a replicant, but an illegal replicant at that as well. So, you know, they absolutely deserve to have his head shot off at that point. Whether that's true by the end of the adventure, we'll find that out. Anyway.
There's interesting parallels here, again, going back to the Wild West, with patty rollers.
What are patty
rollers? Patty rollers were men, I suspect men rather than women, who were paid to hunt runaway slaves.
Ah, yes. Yeah.
And they were tended to be very successful because it was very difficult.
It's very easy to prove you weren't a runaway slave.
Well, it's impossible, pretty much. And actually running away far enough to the point where they can't grab you and take you back is exceedingly difficult.
Yeah. Yes, but, I can imagine.
Anyway, sorry, a slight digression.
In fact, 12 Years a Slave is kind of all about
it's
that.
Exactly.
It?
Yeah, it's all about that completely, yeah.
That's what we'll do in our next episode in 2 weeks' time.
Excellent.
So I guess it's goodbye from him.
And it's goodbye from me.
And may the icons bless your adventures.
You have been listening to The Effect podcast, presented by Fiction Suit and the RPG Gods. Music, Stars on a Black Sea, used with permission of Free League Publishing.